It's News Talk 1400 KFRU's Columbia Morning. I really like Terry Gainey's work when he was with the Post-Dispatch, and since then, and he's been friendly enough to come in, not often, but occasionally, you've come in. It's good to see you again. How are you?
Fine, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing well also.
Thanks for inviting me.
We're going to talk about newspapers. We're going to talk about the Tribune. We're going to talk about the article that was headlined, The Tribune's Tragedy, which was in the Gateway Journalism Review. As a way to start that, I thought of you this morning when I was looking at the Washington Post online. Margaret Sullivan writes an article. It says, "Is this strip mining or journalism? Sobs, gasp, expletives over latest Denver Post layoffs." Yes. That's been happening so much at so many of the newspapers around this country. And what happened was the publisher called them together. I think it was the publisher. No, the editor, one of the editors, called them together and said, "We've got to lay off more people." And what shocks me about this, and this is something that it speaks to your history, the newsroom there in the Denver Post was now going to be below 70 positions. And people think 70, that sounds like a lot. Apparently, they had at one point in time more than 600 journalists.
Well, what's happened at the Denver Post is representative of a lot of newspapers' experiences in the last couple of years. And it goes to who owns the chain that's bought your paper. And in the case of the Denver Post, it's a hedge fund. And when hedge funds buy a newspaper, they're not really interested in putting out a good newspaper. They're interested in extracting profits. And that's what the Denver Post is experiencing now.
Isn't it sad? Because they call it, what they call it is the harvesting strategy. We feel like we went through that about 15 years ago when no longer locally owned, we were purchased by a big radio corporation. And the harvesting strategy means you start cutting jobs so that you show a better bottom line. But the question becomes, especially in journalism, and especially when newspapers, and Digital First is the hedge fund that purchased the Denver Post, I believe. As they were saying towards the end, and this is going to be the transition into what we really want to talk about, says towards the end of this Washington Post story by Margaret O'Sullivan, investigative stories like this past Sunday's expose of abuses of Colorado's sober living homes will become even more important in the pecking order, and routine coverage will take a further back seat. As the editor said to the reporter to the Post, quote, "It's been a long time since we sat through every city council meeting." And then the comment, "But as every journalist knows, it's often normal beat reporting and apparently unexciting meetings that can generate the most important leads. And what kind of coverage also has the immeasurable benefit of letting public officials know that someone is watching." And that's key. That's key to journalism's role, isn't it?
That's correct. You know, newspapers provide a fabric at the local level to find out what your community is doing, what public officials are directing in terms of policy, and you only learn that through the constant, frequent attendance of what's going on at all the meetings, the school board, city council, the county commission. And as was pointed out in the Tribune story that I did for the Gateway Journalism Review, Jody Jackson pointed out to how he attended these planning sessions, and they were very, very crucial in him understanding what the issues are. And I don't think the regular reader or listener understands that this fabric goes out across the country. Most of the news that is collected and distributed by the Associated Press originates at the local newspaper level. Sure, your radio station may contribute a story here and there, but for the most part, it's a local newspaper that is reporting on something that's going to be shared through the AP. As those sources of information dry up, our people are becoming less informed.
It's a situation that bothers me. I think on the personal level of people who may not work in the field of media or journalism, they're bothered because of the other changes that they see, cosmetic changes. They don't like that this is gone, a certain cartoon or comic strip. They don't like that this page is gone, or they no longer know where to go to see the list of obituaries, or the consistency. I think there's something in a printed newspaper, and I understand I'm showing my age by talking about printed newspapers, but I think there are a lot of people who, in addition to the understanding of what you just talked about of covering the news items, they're saying just the overall tone and feel and look. I think we're impacted by that. It could be a font change. It could be a layout change. Somebody may not be able to describe that, but they know that it's there and it bothers them.
That's right. And what happened here in Columbia with the purchase of the Tribune, several big things happened quickly. The copy desk was gotten rid of. And within a few months, the newspaper went from an afternoon edition to a morning edition, which was a shockeroo for a lot of old-time subscribers.
What's a copy desk do?
Well, the copy desk is the last pair of eyes that takes a look at a reporter's story before it gets put into the newspaper. It fixes spelling problems. It puts a headline on the story. If something doesn't seem to make sense, the copy desk really is the last polishing agent that a reporter relies on before her or his copy gets put before the reader. Copy desks are very important. They also have long-term knowledge of what's gone on in the community, and they can make sure a reporter is referring to the grasslands, knowing where the grasslands is.
That's a good point, and I was going to ask you, the importance of having it local is key. Now, how does that differ from an editor? How does that differ from a proofreader? What's the difference of those general roles, or are they piled up into one of the copy desk?
The copy desk has a group of a handful of people, and the news flows through that desk, and the copy chief editor assigns stories to various copy editors for them to check. And it's their role to put on a headline and make sure everything is copacetic with the story. An editor, overall editor, the managing editor of the paper, is responsible for the general news product and making sure the integrity of journalism is upheld.
I guess a different editor would be like a copy editor, though, right? Somebody looking and making sure that everything is right in a particular story?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terry Ganey is our guest. And again, we're talking specifically about his article on the Gateway Journalism Review, the Tribune's tragedy. Is that available online for those who haven't seen it?
It is. It's available at the Gateway Journalism Review website.
And that's gatewayjr.org. I believe is what that website is, and you could just put in Terry Ganey and his stories would probably come up. Why did you feel led to write this story?
Well, I had observed what had happened to the Tribune for months and had been encouraging people with knowledge about what happened to talk with me about it. And frankly, David, the issue seemed to reach critical mass that I had to write something about it because, to me, it was a very sad thing. I was very, very sad to see what had happened to a paper where I spent 4 years of my journalism career. And I was familiar with how important a newspaper is to this community. It hosts the oldest journalism school in the country. There are people in this town who pay attention to public policy, and they do it through their newspaper. And to see what had happened to the Tribune after the purchase by Gatehouse, I felt like it cried for having some exposure. Now, other cities, other communities in Missouri, Mexico, Hannibal, a couple of other cities, you can name them, Boonville, They've seen their papers get gobbled up this same way. This is not just something happening in Columbia and Denver. It's happening in many places.
I grew up in Macon, Missouri. The Briggs family was the family behind the Macon Chronicle Herald, and it no longer exists. I mean, the Briggs family sold it to other people. I can't remember the name of the company that bought it years ago, and then eventually it just disappeared. Are we trying to hold on to something that time has passed by?
Well, that's the big question. Is there an economic model that can finance daily print journalism in such a way that it's going to answer all the questions we have about government? I think that if you compare the Tribune in Columbia with what happened to the Jefferson City News Tribune, bought by a chain newspaper company, but did not go through the same chaos as we experienced here. There's something to be learned from that. I'm not an economist. I'm not somebody who knows the dollars and cents of the newspaper business, but I believe there's something in the philosophy of that company that is going to take a profit. No doubt it has to turn a profit. It has to pay the bills. But there's something that they're doing that is not as extraction, exploitive, if you want to use that word, than what's happening in other operations.
So is it leadership that makes that decision? Is it saying, we know we could do this differently and maybe turn a more pennies of profit, but we want to stick to this ideal? What do you analyze it as being?
I think to get to the heart of that question is to, we'd have to have a hedge fund operator sitting right here with us and ask them, how much of a percentage do you have to take out when you buy a newspaper? Is it necessary to extract that big a profit to keep a newspaper going? I know that cuts have to be made. You have to balance the books. But the question gets down to, is the company that's buying your paper so much in debt that there's a lot of debt servicing that has to take place just to complete the purchase? These are facts and figures that we don't have the answers to as we sit here. All we have to do is sit and take it, right? We have to put up with a product that doesn't have the news in it that it used to.
So in your research for this story that we're talking about, basing our conversation about, you tried to talk to a whole lot of people. When you tried to talk to Gatehouse, what happened?
Well, I tried to speak with the publisher, and she was busy at the time. They have a new publisher, Terry LaFeisty, and she came in January, and she was upset when the story was published because she would have liked to have had some input to it. But as I had called her and I had sent her an email, and she just couldn't have time for me at the time I was asking for the opportunity to interview her. But in her defense, they recognize that some mistakes were made in the first 18 months following the purchase. When I wrote this story, they were down to one reporter. I've been told, I understand they've hired some more, and there are new names in the paper now. Mm-hmm. They are trying to rectify some of the problems that took place. They are conducting a survey now. The survey is designed to help them answer questions of what they have to do to bring circulation back. And they're also offering subscriptions at discount in an attempt to get people reading the newspaper again. So they recognize that in that first 18 months, they did some things that were shocking to the readers here, and they're trying to straighten that out.
First 18 months, I mean, when Joe Waljasper and John Darko were fired or let go, that was disappointing to a lot of people. When we read like an op-ed piece or a journalism piece talking about comparing firing people to pruning of a, you know, cutting out dead branches out of a tree, I think that was rough. I don't think, I can't remember something that I've heard responded to that really angered people in that kind of a context as that did. And then also when we have been told as readers that don't abandon us, stay with us because we're going to get better. I mean, I was trying to think of a comparison, and I was thinking, if I go to a restaurant and I don't like the food, if the manager of the restaurant or the owner of the restaurant says, well, keep coming back and keep eating it, it's going to get better eventually, that's a hard sell for me.
Right. You have to convince readers there's a value in your product, and it's the news that you need to get through your daily life and to understand what's going on. And for many years, the Tribune did that. And when the readers recognize that they're packed, the pact between the reader and the editor or the newspaper no longer existed, well, they were less inclined to take the paper. they lost 20% in daily and 25% in Sunday circulation within that period of time. It was shocking to readers to see what had happened. Now, I think Columbia is special in the sense that there were a lot of gray-haired subscribers who were used to getting their paper in a certain way, and they're going to be less inclined to deal with changes. That's another thing that the publisher has to deal with.
We'll take phone calls for Terry Gainey. 442-8255 is our phone number. Somebody's already called. Caller, you're on the air with us. Hi.
Newspapers and radio stations are not manufacturing widgets. They get their money from advertising, and if people don't subscribe to the paper, they don't make any money because they can't show where the readers are. And that's the thing it seems like all these companies seem to forget. As far as the Tribune goes, they could have done a lot of different things to make the transition different. They could have said, hey, how do you like this print on this section? But they didn't. Everything fell on deaf ears.
Thanks for the comment. Reaction, Terry?
Well, the caller makes a good point. One of the things that a newspaper does, in addition to bringing news and advertising to the reader, the newspaper sells those readers to the advertiser. In other words, the more readers you have reading your product, the more valuable your advertising is because it reaches more people. So it's a balancing act that the reader points, this caller points out, is very crucial to the success of a paper. If people are dropping the paper, it's a downward spiral that the publisher has to figure out a way of keeping those subscribers because that influences the advertising base.
I don't get except one hard copy newspaper now, and I always have liked hard copy newspapers, but I've bought in to the subscription of, I've subscribed at least to three newspapers now online, and I'm used to reading them online, and I will pay for online subscriptions. But I got to tell you, if I look at what I pay for, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Kansas City Star, the Columbia Daily Tribune, the Tribune by and far, for what I'm paying now to get it on copy and have access online, is way more expensive than even the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Kansas City Star, which offered me good deals to go online. And I've been a longtime online subscriber to the New York Times and will continue to do that because of the product that it puts out. But I'm going to have to check in and say, what's the break I can get on my subscription now for the Tribune? Because it doesn't make sense to pay that much for a diminished product.
Right. Newspapers now, David, are trying to figure out in this world of the internet and digital news copy, what is the balancing act that brings in enough money through digital subscriptions to pay for the product and to generate digital advertising vis-a-vis the print copy that's thrown on the lawns. I still get a paper thrown on my lawn, and I, like you, subscribe to the New York Times online. So I read my news both ways. But frankly, sitting down with a newspaper in the morning with a cup of coffee is one of the high points of my day. It always has been, and I hope it continues for, you know, many years to come. But papers are trying to figure out this balancing act, and somehow there's going to have to be a key model that is developed that finances good journalism through digital and print copies.
If we were saying this to like my 14-year-old daughter or a 21-year-old college student or a 31-year-old entrepreneur in town here, they would say we're archaic in the sense of wanting to have our continued hard paper. But I'm fine. I'm willing to grant them that. But I hope, and I think what in addition to finding that balancing act, I think the importance of local news done well, not relying on a Twitter account or a Facebook account to point out what a national or state leader wants people to hear and the control that they are after for that. I think we have to educate people. I don't care whether you read it on hard copy or online, but I respect people, and oftentimes it's the newspaper people who have the time, the training, and the knowledge, and the talent to do it. we've got to let them know that's an important role to play in a free society.
Our democracy will not survive without it. We live in very dangerous times, I feel, in that people don't know where to get the true facts of what's going on. And there's a lot of talk and rhetoric in the political world about things like fake news and that sort of things. People sometimes want to shoot the messenger when the messenger is telling them what the truth is. And I believe that newspapers have always filled that role. Look, I am a judge for the Associated Press when it has these newspaper contests across the country. It's a voluntary thing that puts you in the position of looking at newspaper copy that's appeared in another state. I can't be a judge of something happening in Missouri. But I see what newspapers across the country are reporting, and they're still trying to do good work. You look at Rudy Keller here in town, is still doing great stories, even though he's working at an understaffed publication. So there are journalists who are still trying to find out what's going on and explain it to the community for the good of the community.
Yes, there are. I say, indeed, there are. There is one side of the conversation that has been very good at having people question all of that, though. And sadly, they are questioning what is good and legitimate and doubting it. And it's like, oh, I can't trust Rudy Keller's motivation. He's opinionated on this or whatever. Choose Jason Hancock from the Kansas City Star or Terry Gainey if his byline is occurring. I mean, if this was that way 40 years ago, just think of I understand journalists make mistakes. Newspaper writers make mistakes, but I think they hold themselves to a certain standard if they're a true journalist and newspaper person where they have to then admit it and correct it, or they have a publisher or an editor come out and say, this was wrong. We're going to get it right next time.
Right.
And that's not being done by those who are spewing out opinions and falsehoods.
Are calling some nationally syndicated television interviewer a terrible name in a public speech, something you would never heard. You would have never heard Dwight Eisenhower use such a term with Ed Murrow. You would have never heard Lyndon Johnson say such a thing about Walter Cronkite. But you have the current president saying something about Michael Todd.
We got time for one more comment. Caller, that's yours. Hi.
Good morning. I want to applaud the recognition that news print is the only way there is any distillation of all the stuff that's out there. And as to the Tribune, those of us with gray hair are going to take the time to read what's in the Tribune, and that readership should be respected so that advertisers pay for our readership because we vote too. Young people spend all their time on their phones and the internet, and they get sound bites. And the only place that we can get distilled information, I called it, is the newsprint. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. I think, sadly, radio and television has done a lot to destroy the world of journalism.
Well, I guess we could have another program to discuss that.
We will.
But this caller had a lot of words of wisdom.
Yeah. Anything final thought, Terry?
Well, I just encourage people to seek out the news at authoritative sites, authoritative places. You know, the Associated Press plays the news right down the center, as far as I'm concerned. And there are a lot of sites out there that you can find on the internet that are nothing but propaganda, and try to avoid those as best you can.
Terry Gainey's story was called The Tribune, or is called The Tribune's Tragedy, gatewayjr.org. If you haven't seen it, Terry Gainey has been our guest. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
This is KFRU.